At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Tuesday morning, April 4th, 2023. It is the Beating the Book podcast, the 87th Masters, golf's first major, a tradition unlike any other. First major of the year, that is, not of all time. It's Gil Alexander. Thanks for joining us today on the show to preview the Masters from a betting perspective. Two of the three members of the Long Shots podcast, which, if you're not familiar, is VSiN's golf dedicated podcast, which is co-hosted by Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin. Matt, too much of a diva to show up for this one because you guys have a live Masters Long Shots performance coming up in about an hour after this show. But Kelly and Wes are here. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you for having us.
Matt only shows up for the big stuff, Gil. Okay, come on.
Apparently so.
Dial back your expectations. Come on.
So now, by the time people listen to this, it will probably have already happened. But on the off chance that people listen just before it happens, you guys are doing a live Long Shots at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern today.
Yes, but it will also be in the normal Long Shots podcast feed. So everybody that listens to us weekly, go find podcasts wherever podcasts can be found. Head to VSiN.com. Right. You'll find a whole write-up. We got the Masters guide out that we all took a part in, as well as Matt Youman. So definitely go check that all out. And this will be, yes, in our normal Long Shots podcast feed. We've gotten a few questions about that on Twitter.
And so, for people who are listening to this, being like, wait a minute, but if I'm listening to this, why do I have to go listen to Long Shots pod? Well, you'll get to hear all of Matt's picks as well, and you guys probably are holding something back for that show as well.
Yeah, I would say that, and Wes, I don't know about you, but I kind of expect these shows to be led differently from with Gil versus Matt Brown, so Gil, I think we're going to be okay. Right.
Gil's will be slightly more Jewisher, is what he means. I think it's...
Gil, you're being Meshuggah.
We don't really like your kind coming down to Augusta, Gil. I know you want to join us for the Masters.
Okay, so let's begin with, and we've talked about this already a myriad of times on a numbers game. I'm sure you've talked about it, Wes, on different shows as well. But let's just start with the weather, because that's an issue here. First of all, the Masters pool of players is always like a 90-player pool kind of thing. And then there's a lot of like sort of dead money players who have won Masters, you know, during the Eisenhower administration.
The Larry Mises of the world, yeah. The Jose Maria Othabels, yes.
So it's what makes this tournament so awesome, because it's a small pool of players, smallish compared to others, and it's the most predictive of all golf courses Augusta is from year to year. So you start with that as a baseline. But we are throwing in the weather here. So it's 80% as we look at the weather forecast, and you know how weather forecasts go. And Wes, we'll start with you. So it's 80% chance on Friday, 100% chance on Saturday, 60% chance on Sunday. We're doing this Tuesday morning. Do you let that affect your handicapping?
Yes and no, I think. I think, look, you have to, with the draw bias, you know, you could try to handicap that as much as you can, but sometimes you're just at the mercy of the weather gods here. But just when I'm looking at, okay, how is the weather going to affect play? I think where it affects play is the fact that, look, you have elevated tee boxes on most of these holes, so that's going to add to the impact of the wind. I'm worried more about the wind than I am about the rain necessarily here. Over the past 10 days, I believe, leading up to the event, as we record on Tuesday, about a little over 2 inches of rainfall is what we've seen on this course, and we're probably going to get that over the weekend at some point or one or the other. So what I think it's going to do is, how is it going to affect the course? It's going to affect the course. It's going to soften up the fairways. So that makes the course actually play even longer, because this is 75-45. So this is not a short course by any stretch, and it actually plays a little bit longer because it's more hilly. That's why, you know, when Tiger came back
last year. This is the Tiger-proofing, right?
Yes, part of that, and plus the fact Tiger coming from the injury, that's why it was such a struggle for him to see him get around, because this is a big course. This is not like a flat course like in the desert, where even if it's 7,500, 7,600 yards, where it's easy to walk and easy to manage. Plus, getting the cooler temperatures here on the weekend, the ball's not going to travel as far. So this is why, at least from what I did, you want a little bit more bombing off the tee. And whether you're using those for outright bets or maybe top 10, top 20 placement market bets, I think distance is really going to matter this year with this weather forecast.
Yeah, completely agree there. Off the tee, always important at the Masters. I think maybe a little bit more this week. We heard a couple of the guests mention that on a numbers game as well. I do think the one thing to keep in mind with the Masters is they have that, I just looked it up, the sub-air system, where they have this like a air filtration system to get the water out of the greens and even the fairways. They're one of the few places in the world, Wes, I think, that actually has that running in the fairways. Mm-hmm. And not just the green. You've heard some differing reports over the past couple days of the rain being bad, but they expect them to dry out pretty well here over the next couple days. So we'll have to see. I think my advice always with weather betting is, okay, if you're betting first round leaders like I do basically every tournament, it is absolutely something that you need to keep in the front of your mind, and you should be putting those first round leader bets in basically up until the last minute that you can. When you really have the best feel for what the weather is going to be like while your guy is playing. Beyond that, I think you can often, golf bettors often get themselves in trouble by trying to predict stuff.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Because we've seen it before, Gil. Sometimes the weather changes. A lot of times it changes.
You've noticed that.
Yeah, right.
It's not an exact science.
I walked outside here yesterday.
Especially when we get to like the Open.
Right.
That's where you get like the pronounced draw bias at the Open Championship. And sometimes you're just at the mercy of it. You're just on the bad side of the draw. And none of your guys contend.
The biggest thing, though, is I think if the weather is – people don't think about this one enough. If it gets really bad, and you brought this up earlier, I think 100%, right, was what we're looking at on Saturday. If it gets really bad, sometimes you just get rained out for the rest of the day, and they pick up their balls and start again the next day. So if you have this whole strategy in mind of – which wave I'm going to play and how this is going to work out, that all might be shot to pieces by the time they blow that horn and then they're done for the round.
It's true. So when Drew Dinsick, Dan Weston, and I do our tennis slam pods, and we also do Indian Wells, we're always trying to time it right after the draw. Sometimes we even get lucky and it's happening while we're on. You guys were waiting to see where the tee times were. We're Tuesday. We're 48 hours before this thing starts. And you guys were like, where are the tee times? And Wes, they just came out just now?
They did just come out. So, you always get like different types of players because, you know, you mentioned that you have former champions here. You have a few amateurs here from all over the world. And you have guys that, you know, now with the live thing, you have live players mixed in with different type of players. So it's always interesting to look at those storylines, who's paired with who. But just looking at this, you know, kind of on the once over, nothing really like strikes me, you know, like I didn't really see any, you know, two guys that hate each other or anything like that. Like I didn't see Rory wasn't paired with Phil Mickelson.
They didn't play that joke on anybody.
Or anything like that.
Yeah,
they didn't put Patrick Reed with Rory or one of like the PGA Tour loyalists here. So you're getting these tee times, early on, obviously the three honorary starters player, Nicklaus and Watson, hit the first tee shot. And then I believe 8 Eastern is the first tee time, goes all the way to 2 Eastern, which the last group I believe is Jordan Spieth, Tommy Fleetwood, Tony Finau for the Thursday group, and then inverted, obviously, on Friday.
All right, go ahead.
I was looking for these as quickly as humanly possible for a very, very specific strategy of how I'm playing this tournament.
Oh.
Now, I could save that for when we go over bets, or if you want me to launch into
now. Let's hear that now. Okay. I like that.
Gil, it's a guy that you're on in this tournament, and you love him, Scottie Scheffler.
Yes.
Everything that all of my research, and Wes, we're going to be hitting on this a bunch, but running the models and everything, Scheffler is so by far my number one rated guy in this field, and not even really that close.
Defending champion, and usually that doesn't happen back-to-back.
It usually does not happen. Right. But we saw what he did last year. I think he's in the best form of those big three right now between Rory and Rahm. I wanted to see one thing. Is he going to be early or is he going to be late? Because if he's an early tee time, I might have to fire before this tournament begins, and I don't really want to fire at 7-1. But if I can wait, now I'm going to approach this from a live standpoint, because as Wes told me, he is, what, one of the later ones?
He is the third-to-last group,
by the way. Third-to-last group. So what you can do now, and we even have a book that offers this in Vegas, or two books, but if you're outside of Vegas, or you're in Colorado, Jersey, whatever, DraftKings, MGM, FanDuel, all these books will keep up outright markets throughout the round. So all I'm looking for is someone to go out early and post a low number, go low, and Scheffler's odds should get longer before he even tees off. So that is what I'm hoping to do, is actually grab a piece of Scottie Scheffler before he tees off.
Same applies, by the way, to Rory McIlroy. You mentioned Scheffler, third to last group, Scheffler, Holmes, the amateur Sam Bennett, the U.S. amateur champion, second to last group, Tom Kim, Rory McIlroy, and Sam Burns. So two of the top three, along with John Rahm, that you're seeing anywhere 7-1, 8-1, 9-1. Like Kelly said, you can wait, and then you get that double digits. Because, like, I'm more partial to Rory McIlroy. I don't want to bet him necessarily at 7-1. I want to wait a little bit.
I like that strategy. Who are the two books? I'm going to guess one of them Caesars. Who is the other book in Vegas that leaves them up?
Boyd.
Okay.
Boyd and Caesars, that was the only one I'm kind of unsure of, because I've seen them do it most of the time. I think they're doing it all the time now, but...
Well, because I could tell there's like pillars of offshore, right? Bookmaker, let's just say who it is. Bookmaker will not, they do it a little more for the majors, but like on a Thursday, they're not leaving those things up during the round, I don't believe.
Yeah, it's interesting. DraftKings will leave them up the entire
time. Of course they will.
Yeah. Oh. That's it's
not these, like, we'd be allowed to bet there anyway.
Right, exactly. But for everybody listening, that might be outside of Nevada. These are those things, though, that it's, how do you, I don't want to say manipulate the markets, right? But it's looking for different way. How do you manipulate that number? Well, you don't, Wes doesn't want to bet 7-1 on Rory. You have to think about these ways if you want to extract more value out of those golfers.
All right, let's start with your outrights, and then I'll sort of cherry pick golfers that I want to ask you about specifically. But Wes, let's start with your outrights that you have in pocket currently.
Yeah, and look, with the Masters, I usually, because these are up so much longer, Gil, because these are up, you know, come the wintertime, you're going to probably have more outrights than you would usually have on like an average tournament or like US Open or PGA.
And you're going to have them at different numbers, so there's going to be a segment of the audience that's going to be like,
So I'll get like my anti-post, what they call it overseas, out of the way, a couple I bet.
Well, tell us if you'd still bet them at current numbers as well.
Cameron Young, yes, in the 30 range where I'm seeing him. I got him at 45-1. I bet him during the Dell match play, and look, he went to the final, lost to Sam Burns, obviously. Cameron Young, I would still bet. Jason Day, which I have at 40, I probably would not bet. I got very lukewarm. This was before Jason Day had that little bout with vertigo or had the dizzy spell that he oftentimes has, and I had bet him before that, and he was 3-up against Scottie Scheffler in the match play, and then that's when it happened. I was like, oh no, here we go again.
Yep.
Because Jason Day, the poor guy, I'm a big fan of his, but he's made of glass. He's always injured. He's always sick. So, no, I'm not going to bet him in the 20-ish range this week. Absolutely not.
Okay. But Cam Young is one of yours that you're
Cameron Young, I would still be willing to sponsor in the low to mid-30s.
Okay. Those are all that you have, or you have more?
That's what I had a couple weeks ago. But the ones I added this week, I did go with Jordan Spieth, which I found a little over 20 in the market here in town. He's had a couple chances to win already this year. He was fourth at Bay Hill. You know, that very condensed leaderboard where there are about eight guys, and Kurt Kitayama was the first guy to make a putt on 17-1. Jordan Spieth could have easily won that. He probably should have won in Tampa before he hit a ball in the water on 16. Yep. You could argue he should have three green jackets here instead of just the one in 2015.
He definitely should have had that second one, for sure.
But with Danny Willett. Absolutely. Yeah. Danny Willett was able to steal it from him in the end, but... possession 9/10 of the law, of course. Second in strokes gained around the green over the last 36 rounds. What's that?
I like that.
It is. Danny Willett's not saying, no, don't invite me to champions dinner.
That's right. I'll hold it at my house.
Yes. 21-1 for Spieth. He's second in strokes gained around the green, which I think is going to be important this week, considering only about a 60% rate in terms of greens and regulation. These are hard greens to hit. And the guy who's been the best in strokes gained around the green, Justin Thomas. And Kelly and I have had this conversation a lot, Gil, especially with the top 10 to 15 players in the world. You can have target numbers on these guys when they drift to a certain number. Justin Thomas's number for me is anything north of 25-1.
It's like an auto play at that point.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, he has never really been right in the hunt here. He's got a couple really good finishes. The approach play has dipped a little bit, but he's been great around the green this year. He also has Bones McKay, Jim Bones McKay on the bag, who won this thing three times, of course, with Phil Mickelson. So Justin Thomas, once he got up to above 25, he was an auto play for me. Tony Finau, who I have just a little bit less than 30-1, top five all four majors, top 10 in actually 10 top 10s in the 26 that he's played. The difference with Finau now, and Matt Brown, Kelly, and I talk about this on Long Shots all the time, is win equity. Who wins? You know, who gets you some wins? And I know Kelly has played a lot of Sam Burns and a lot of Max Homa because they have win equity. Well, so does Tony Finau. Yep. He's won three times since the Open Championship last summer.
I was going to say, this is a new thing we can say to Tony Finau.
Yeah, yes, because remember, he didn't win for like 5 years after he won that Puerto Rico Open. So Tony Finau, 29. Colin Morikawa, who I got at 34-1 at Circa, and he's still drifting upwards, so apparently not drawing a lot of interest.
Friendless in the market, as our friend Dan Weston would say.
Yes, yes, he is, but I'll be his pal.
Yeah.
He has not won in 18 months anywhere. He won in Dubai for the DP World Tour Championship at the end of 2021, but one of the world's best iron players, second on approach, fourth on ball striking, fourth tee to green, last 36 rounds, so Colin Morikawa for me. Sun Jae-in, that was one that I just bet on a drift. I got him at 44-1. Hasn't really done anything wrong this season, but just hasn't contended except at Torrey Pines where he was fourth earlier this year. But second on debut here in 2020, was eighth last year. So like you say, predictive course, go with guys that play well here every year. And Sun Jae-in pretty much does. Another guy that does is Hideki Matsuyama, who I wasn't going to bet, but I saw him at 50-1. I'm like, man, this could feel like a Matsuyama week, who is probably putting the best he's putted his entire career. And seven of his eight PGA Tour wins are on bent grass. So I think he's going to like these greens.
And won this tournament with one of the more iconic moments ever, with the nod from the caddy.
Yes.
One of my favorite moments in sports.
Sports.
Look, and I know he's been battling a little bit of a neck injury, but it looks like he's good to go. But Matsuyama is almost—it's almost like Tom Brady with Bill Belichick. Like Tom Brady was always listed on the injury report, but you knew he was going to play. I think that's the deal with Matsuyama. I didn't go with many bombs because the average price of the winner over the last 10 years is like 27-1. So you can't go that deep. Even though I played one deeper guy, Minwoo Lee, 95-1.
Minwoo Lee,
who finished T14 last year, actually shot 30. On the front nine and then 40 on the back. So he missed out getting a return invite by one shot, but he gets back in being in the top 50 in the world. So Minwoo, 95-1 at Circa Sports if you're here in Vegas.
Let me just, before we get to Kelly's, and then I'll ask you about specific golfers, a couple of the names you mentioned. Tony Finau, point out, Joe Pita, who has been on this Masters preview many years, but is not really diving into golf these days. He did write the Bible on analytics at Augusta, which is not public domain information. It's proprietary. He had to do the digging on this. And Tony Finau in that 2019 tour guide was the guy who came out with the best metrics on this course. So that's a nod for your Tony Finau pick. And the other one is, Kelly and I talked about that this morning on a numbers game, Dave Tindall, who's been on this Masters preview before, at Dave Tindall Golf on Twitter, who writes for Betfair. He does his, like we do our college basketball formula, Wes, he does his Masters formula where he goes through the age of the golfer, the world ranking, their appearances and their placements at Augusta before, what their recent form is, their lowest Augusta round, you know, strokes gained around the green, on and on with his different categories. And Jordan Spieth was the guy that came up as the main guy, just nipping Rory. So shout out to your Jordan Spieth call as well. Kelly, what do you got?
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I'll start right where Wes did with Justin Thomas. This was it's not a bigger bet for me this week. It is a little bit of a smaller for an outright, but Wes, I can't say much more perfectly than Wes. 25-1 is about my breaking point where I was kind of tracking him all week. Do I have him rated below a few other guys? Yeah, but he drifted to 26-1 here at Circa in town. I finally pulled the trigger last night. It's a bet I had to make. I think you summed it up all pretty well, Wes. Not exactly. So many times it felt like he could have finished better here at the Masters, but he's still, if you just look at it long term, still one of the best, most consistent players at this course. When we talk course history for all these guys, he was top 13 all the models I ran. Not really, as you point out, Wes, not really nice spiking anywhere consistently with some of the stats that we often look at, but we've seen JT do this before. He gets hot this week with those irons or with the putter, because even his iron play has been a little bit down. He gets hot with one of those. I think he's right up there in contention. So 26-1 is where I guess I started from the short end. I'm going short to long here. Max Homa, 36-1. Max Homa, you and I were texting yesterday, Wes, if he wins, or Gil, you and I were texting yesterday about it. If he wins, you might be gone for a while. I might be gone for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Sean McCollum might be doing a numbers game for a couple weeks. And this is mainly just because his number keeps drifting. I understand that this is a guy who has not had a ton of success at Augusta National. 3 years, he's had two missed cuts. It was a T48, I believe, is what he finished. Yeah, T48 last year. But the one thing you have to keep in mind about Max Homa is that he's 32, 33 years old, has been playing on the tour for a while now, but he is not the same golfer that he was 3 years ago.
Such
this
a
guy's
great
point. Game has completely changed.
Yep.
He is elevated into an upper class of players on tour. And it as much as course and tournament history mean here, I'm not throwing it out the window. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying this kind of number in a condensed field on what I consider one of the better golfers in the world is my favorite outright bet that's out there that's available. I think even we got 36-1 here in town at Circa. I've seen 30s though East Coast. I think anything in the 30s, I think is silly on a guy with this level of talent here. He was. Yeah, you know, he's won. We're talking about win equity. Same thing between Tony Finau. The past year and a half, the guy's won 4 times on tour. He has more wins than he does second and third place finishes combined. And if you've followed my golf betting at all, you know how many second place finishes I have. So throw those out the window. Let me get a winner, actually. So he's the guy I'm looking at. He was third in my last 12 bottle, third in the field in approach, first in strokes gained par 4, which can be very important this week. So that is the two guys that I have bet where numbers are basically similar to what I grabbed. Okay. Then as
Homa
West,
and
Homa, Max Homa and Justin Thomas. As Wes laid out, this is Masters betting. I think it's very important if you're a golf bettor like we are to scoop up numbers along the way as you see them. So I do have other bets at longer numbers you're not going to be able to get now. Corey Connors, 85. I have the two guys that won last week, Wes. Mm-hmm. I have Brooks Koepka and Corey Connors somehow. Corey Connors, 85-1, and Brooks Koepka, 99-1, made them forever ago.
Yeah, like if you're betting Brooks right now at 33 or 35-1, you're late
enough
to the party.
Can't do that.
Yeah. You're late right now. So if you scooped it early, good on you. Brooks Koepka now the first man to win 2 live events.
Yep.
Obviously a short sample size, but Yeah, I think you're too late. Don't be late to the party and early for the funeral, as our buddy Will Hill likes to say here on VSiN.
And I would say the same thing about Connors. And then the other one that I have is, I mean, I love that I have this one. It's Jason Day at 85-1, because I really grabbed that as he was kind of moving upward. But I'm with you. I would not bet him where his number's at right now. With what we saw with the Vertigo stuff, him in those low 20s, it concerns me. He could easily go out and win this thing, or he could be a WD after six holes of golf. I don't really know what Jason Day is going to look like out here this week. So I'm just riding with that one outright with
him. The only two that I have, Scottie Scheffler, I did take a preflop number, not the best number, plus 845. But I said a year ago in a numbers game, I feel like he's the one guy you should have every golf tournament in some form. And maybe your strategy of getting him in tournament is better. But I won't remember, so yeah. I have him preflop.
I hear you, man.
And then the other one is Homa at 3550. But plus 35.5-1. So because I think, just like you, when you look around golf's landscape, if it's not Scottie Scheffler or John Rahm as the guys you can always count on, Rory as well, yeah. Max Homa was on that short list. Right, he's been unbelievable.
He's in that next crowd, and we had a couple guests on Numbers Game dropping today. On Tuesday, drop another name that I kind of cringed when I heard it, because he just missed out on my outright card, and I was kind of trying to decide between adding him or trying to do something with Scheffler, which I'm now going to go down the Scheffler road because I do think when you're betting guys at 7-1, you can only bet so many outrights, obviously. Mm-hmm. So Patrick Cantlay, I have rated very high this week, but he falls in the same kind of arguments as of Max Homa. He's not a guy that's necessarily come to Augusta and performed amazing year after year. Yes, he has some good finishes here, but he's also had some bad finishes. As far as recent form right now, he is right below Scottie Scheffler. He is one of my highest rated guys in this field. So I didn't bet an outright on him, and I know we're going to get to other bets, but I have a massive top 20 bet on him.
Okay, but I'm glad you said that about, like, you can't bet everybody. For those who are new to golf betting, and Matt Brown even says this, who's the host of your podcast, Long Shots, he went through a spell back in the day betting golf where he lost a lot of, like, he did the inventory on his golf bets. He's like, oh, I'm getting murdered because I have too many outrights.
Yep.
So you're right, like, you can't bet everybody. You got to pick and choose. On this. So you can't, like, if you have Homa and Cantlay and everybody else, you probably got to edit that. On the other hand, right, like you guys already talking about, because this is my favorite question to ask of golf shows. There's a guy, and I'll ask it of you right now, as you guys are talking about Justin Thomas, in my head, all I'm thinking is, man, these two are right. If Justin Thomas wins this, I'm going to hate myself because he's the one guy that I consider betting in addition to the two that I already have, and I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet. So, Wes, I want to ask you the question, which I love asking, which is the guy that if he wins this tournament will create the most self-loathing in you? Oh. Like, you just don't have bets. You're not going, as far as you can tell right now, you're not going to have bets on him.
Maybe Xander Schauffele.
That was exactly the answer we got this morning from Sia.
Who I have bet, you know, many times, and I'm a big fan of his, and he's got a lot of, like, backdoor top tens. He's been at least in the mix a couple times to win a major, and that's one thing, like, Patrick Cantlay, who I think is eventually going to win multiple majors, hasn't done. Max Homa, I think it'd be fair to point out with him. He's never really been right there.
So it's the win equity thing.
Yes, it's that. And it's also the fact of just having experience at majors, having a little bit of pain. Because I think, you know, it's very rare that a guy, like, wins, you know, your first time out in a major, like, kind of like Morikawa did at Harding Park a couple years ago for the PGA.
And just destroyed. Everybody was waiting for him to collapse, and he never did.
Usually, you know, you got to have a little bit of pain. You got to come close and then fail before you can end up winning. So Xander Schauffele won for me because it's been like, I bet this guy so many times in majors and he's got top fives and top tens out the wazoo, but he's never won. So
I think that's
the one that scares me.
That's a pretty common answer to that question, I would imagine. I'll ask you, Kelly, too. But the Morikawa thing sticks out, too, because why is it that, like, one of my biggest memories of that is just what you're talking about? After the tournament, he's like, I played Harding Park a million times. And it's just like any random parking lot right in front of him. He's out there with his girlfriend sitting on the back of his car after he just won Harding Park. Like, it was nothing. Like, how did you not get nervous about any of this?
Yeah.
Who's your guy for that question?
Yeah, I'm loving that everybody's bringing up Xander because, I think it's fair to say that everything that I just said about Patrick Cantlay, and if I end up going down the Scottie Scheffler route and not betting him, yes, my answer then has to be Cantlay if he wins and I don't have an outright bet on him. Now, again, I have bet him in other ways, but missing out on that outright would suck. But I'm right there with the rest of these guys. That the other answer would be Xander Schauffele, because you have sat here week after week as I've gone through my golf bets, and Xander has made my card almost every week for the past few months. I finally, you know, got away from him the past week or two when his play's kind of been on the downside. I'm pretty. I stick to my models a fair amount. His last 12 round model I ran, he is 50th in it, 5-0. And he is usually like top 10 in everything that I run. So it just speaks to a little bit of, so I mean, he was 19th of players, 39th at the API, 33rd at the Genesis. He's losing strokes off the tee in his past two events. That concerns me at the Masters, where that's a place you need to be gaining. He's not the longest driver of the ball. That always helps here. But still, his game is so good that it would not surprise me if he went out and won, and I'm not going to have a bet on him. And nothing that anybody says will change my mind on him.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because of modeling. And I think we'll get into this more on Long Shots with Matt Brown. This was a tough event to model.
Yep.
Simply because you have 18 live players.
Yeah.
And you don't have a ton of data. I know our friend Rick Gaiman at Rick Rungood has some live data, but it's more of an estimate. It's not something that Liv actually puts out.
So that was the big other macro question we asked on A Numbers Game this week, which is, what do you do about the Liv golfers without that kind of data? Like you just mentioned, Brooks Koepka's won an event. That's his second Liv win, but he just won it. He's had great success here. That's an understatement here at Augusta. Do you read into that, or do you just kind of, like, I got my number, that's great, but anybody who's taking it at this number now, like, it's too dicey for you to do that. There's not enough to go on.
I approach the live guys, basically. I don't think I have an outright on any of them, but I am going to approach them more in, like, the placement markets. And I've did a couple prop markets, too, because you get a lot of props this week, of course. Nationality prop, low amateur, low left-hander, low debutant. And I did play one live player this week. I played Mito Pereira for low debutant and low South American, which means he basically has to beat his fellow Chilean Joaquin Niemann because the third guy is an amateur. So that's what I played, because I looked at Mito Pereira. I was like, hey, this guy's got, you know, a sixth and a fifth in his two of his last three LIV events. So at least he's up there.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing about LIV, what we've seen so far. You don't get that consistency with a lot of guys. Every once in a while, DJ is going to show up and be right there.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, he's going to be in the middle of the pack. So you can never really know, I think, because you just don't get that consistency that you get on the PGA Tour if you're playing week after week, or the DP World Tour, for that matter, where it's like top 10, top 15, top 10, top 5, you know, where you're putting all those strings. That's, I think, why both of us ended up betting Jason Day at various points, because he was like in the money on the first page of the leaderboard like every single week.
Yeah.
But you don't get that with a lot of these LIV guys because the schedule is so erratic.
All right, let's do some of the other. Oh, go ahead.
For LIV, for me, I'll say a couple things just real quick.
Yeah.
Wes has, and look, I'm sure there are more others that have watched more out there. Wes has probably watched 20 times more LIV golf than I have, and that's if he spent 20 minutes watching it. He's watched 20 minutes more.
Because that's about what I spent this weekend, to be honest with you.
But, let me do the math. Kelly has watched 1 minute. I got it. Got it.
So what's fascinating to me is I think mostly everybody I've talked to that I respect in the golf betting community has pretty much had similar answers of, look, hey, unless numbers really drift on guys, I'm staying away from them because there's just not enough. There's not enough data. There's not enough. That's data, even if we had data supplied by LIV, right? We don't even get that, statistical data. But we haven't even seen these guys play that much. So it's, even if you're trying to do the eyeball test, I think it's tough to do. But Gil, it's the number one question I have gotten tweets about over the past 2 weeks. What, different props are listed for LIV golfers in the Masters. All these things. It's the number one subject I've been tweeted about, asking questions about how I'm approaching.
Because no one knows the answer.
Because nobody knows the answers.
Yeah. One more thing to add on this, too, because I asked Jeff Davis, who's the head golf odds maker at Circa Sports here in Las Vegas, and he said, you know, that's a good question about these LIV guys, but DJ is getting support.
Yeah.
Like, DJ's getting the benefit of the doubt, of course, because he won a green jacket here in the COVID, the November Masters of 2020. But yet with Cam Smith, he says, we can't write a bet on him. We're not getting any action.
Is pretty fascinating.
So I heard, I don't know how much of you watched some of the Masters press conferences yesterday. Tip of the cap to Cameron Smith for being the only LIV golfer that would speak to the mass media press conference, okay? But he admitted, like, you know, I think some of these guys are being more open and honest about, hey, what this money does to you and changes your life. And he talked about taking a very long time off of golf here recently and enjoying time with friends and family before they kind of started up the new LIV season. That concerns me for a guy, you know, when some of these guys on the PGA Tour have been playing week in and week out for the past 3 months, a guy like that taking that much time off concerns me. Matt Brown fired back on me a couple weeks ago when I brought up, well, I'd probably be looking at some of the younger guys who've got a long career ahead of them, like Amito Pereira, Joaquin Neiman, and Abraham Ancer. But, you know, his retort to that was, well, or those guys are just collected fat cash and they're young, mid-20s living the life now. Yeah. They're like, what's the motivation for them to be out on the driving range every day? I think it's a fair point.
Absolutely.
Tiger brought that up. What's the incentive to practice?
Yeah.
What's the incentive to really get in the dirt when you're getting that kind of money?
Simply based off of of historical perspective from the Masters, like Wes said, if I had to bet one, it would be DJ.
This is complete speculation because there's no static answer to this, and it probably depends on who the golfer is. But what would it take, like, for each of these guys, I'm talking about, like, in-tournament bets now, like, if DJ is lurking, let's use a broad term like that, lurking after the second round, are you jumping in right there on him? Or do you tend to wait till the final day? Obviously, they say Saturday's moving day at Augusta, but there's nothing like, but a tournament is won on the back nine on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, is there, and this is such a tough question to answer, but is there a moment that you think is optimal to jump in on some of these guys, or is there no way to answer that?
You're just talking live outright supplies. Yes. I think for any golfer, I actually treat it pretty similar to my NBA live betting. I think it's that kind of second quarter, third quarter time, the second round, third round time. More in golf is a little later, I would say, after the cut is made, after the second round, start looking at it then. So after the second round or in the third round is a great time to look at guys live. But that's just a blanket statement on everybody. I don't think the LIV guys will make me think any more or less about that.
Yeah, then this won't be a Kitayama situation where you're like, I can get him at plus 350. There's only two more holes. There won't be that available, probably.
Correct.
Yeah. And also with, like, golf outright, like, live betting, you do want to bet with the momentum. Oftentimes in, like, your other stick and ball sports, like basketball, like football, you want to play against the run sometimes. Right, I see people all the time, including people we know. It's like, okay, there was a big rush of points right away. Over. And it's like, oftentimes you want to play against that. You know, you want to play against runs because all of a sudden you're getting that right number. Whereas in golf, you want to play on a guy that's maybe a little bit off the pace or a few holes ahead. And that's where you want to jump in on a guy. And I think it's going to be tougher to do that this weekend because we're probably going to get a lot of stops and starts. We're probably going to get a lot of intermittent play.
It's a good point.
And, you know, where this could go into Monday. So it's going to be a lot harder because different guys deal with the weather differently. Like we were talking about Patrick Cantlay. I just saw a tweet from our friend Jeff Feinberg. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I love Patrick Cantlay, but my concern isn't the majors record. It's the fact that he often looks miserable when he's playing out there. And how is he going to be when it's cold and wet?
Patrick Cantlay
face.
Because
some of these guys are going to be like, man, hell with this.
Have we ever had a Masters go to Monday?
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
A few years ago, I believe we did. I don't remember when the last one was. I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember it offhand at all.
Yeah, because did the COVID year go to Monday?
Oh, you know what? I would never have remembered. If it did in, well, 2020, I thought he ran away with it, didn't he, Dustin Johnson?
He did, yeah. but
did
I
we,
think
we have a delay? Maybe you're right.
Yeah, because I was trying, because I felt like we've had one in recent years. So, we don't get it necessarily all that often.
All right, Kelly, give whatever derivative bets you want to give here and then save some for long shots.
Yeah, I'll roll through. Can't lay top 20. I already brought up. I'll give them all out here. I don't really care. I think we're going to have some different audiences.
Okay.
Can't lay top 20, big. Tony Finau, top 20 big. I didn't play the outright, but I absolutely agree with what everybody's saying about Finau. I actually think somehow he's like flying under the radar heading into this event too. Like, mm-hmm. You look back, he's still playing well. You know, might not be winning events every week, but he's still been playing well. So I did play him top 20. Max Homa, Victor Hovland, top 20s. Big on Homa and big on Hovland. I love Hovland this week. I think he's another guy like Tony Finau who's had good finishes here. At Augusta, his game fits pretty well for it, as long as he doesn't get too much in trouble around the green. I think he's a good top 20 bet this week. I am staying away from betting outrights on him until I see him win an event, but I think he's a good top 20 play this week. And then I did Keith Mitchell's a guy I approached a little interestingly. He was very high up there in my models, which he's been playing great, especially off the tee here this season. And I've bet him a few different times. He's only played the Masters once, so he doesn't really have that history here. So I'm trying to tread lightly, and I'm kind of just going big or going home with him. So I played a top 10 on him at 7-1, and I played him in a couple matchups. I played him over Kurt Kitayama, never played here before. Played him over Mito Pereira as well. So those two, I played Keith in top 10, and then those two matchups I just mentioned. Other tournament matchups, I played Victor Hovland over Matt Fitzpatrick. Matt Fitzpatrick, another guy. I don't want to say I'm necessarily fading this week, but I am betting on him, and I do think there are some matchup opportunities to bet against him. I don't think this is a perfect fit for his game. We've seen him struggling a little bit more here recently. I think that's a good matchup bet. Max Homa, I took over Cameron Young. I think Cameron Young's it's just another number play on Max Homa, though. I think Cameron Young's a good golfer, but I'm getting plus 125 on a tournament matchup on Homa over him. I got to go with that bet. And then one you're going to laugh at, Gary Woodland, minus 102 over JT Poston. I really didn't plan on having any Gary Woodland bets.
He loves Gary Woodland.
But then top debutant, I don't know how he rated out for you, Wes. Taylor Moore, I bet it over 7-1. I was shocked, actually, at how highly he was rated in my models.
They've been getting support down at Circa for Taylor Moore, because I asked about the rookies here, so to speak.
Okay.
And they've been getting support. By the way, to clean one thing up, 1983 was the last Monday finish that was Seve.
Seve
Ballesteros, a four-shot win over Tom Kite and Bryn Crenshaw. So that surprises me that long ago for a Monday finish.
Yeah. I'm going to cherry pick golfers. Wes, what derivatives have you bet? By the way, debutante, why do we never have a debutante market in any other tournament but this one?
I know, because it's such a smaller field too. There's 88, because they don't have debutantes necessarily in the U.S. Open, because you're oftentimes getting random qualifiers.
Well, you have to qualify.
That's true. Yeah. So that's tough to do, but I played two in the debutante. One was Mito Pereira at 6-1. Look, in the last three live events, 15th, 6th, and 5th, he's been top 7 in driving distance in all of those events, 4th, 2nd, and 1st for greens and regulation in those last three events. And then I did play one longer one, Adrian Meronk at 12-1, just because if you look, driving distance is going to matter, and both Mito and Adrian Meronk can absolutely bomb it off the tee. So I think that he takes better to see in this course the first time than the favorite, who is Tom Kim, in the market. But Tom Kim, look, a lot of things he does well, but he's not a real long hitter.
Right.
So I think he might struggle the first time here. A couple other prop markets I played. I played a low amateur, and I got it at plus 165. The 19-year-old NCAA champion, Gordon Sargent, who I may bet is a top 42 to make the cut. I think we actually have a chance with an amateur to make the cut here. Number one world amateur in the world plays at Vanderbilt right now. So Gordon Sargent, I played. Also played Brian Harman plus 195 for top lefty, and it's a four-player market.
Top lefty, yes.
Yes.
Harman, Phil?
Harman, Phil, Bubba Watson, and Mike Weir
are the
four left-handers in the field. Harman, by the way, 2 years ago was second after 36 holes and then ended up finishing 12. You know, I wouldn't consider Bubba. I wouldn't consider Weir. The only one I would consider against Harman maybe is Phil. But then you look at Phil last week at the Live event, and he was like 45th. Yeah. Out of 48 players.
Is Mike Weir, and I apologize, Canada, for this, but is Mike Weir the most random of all Masters winners?
He is. Look, he was a pretty solid player in those early 2000s, but this is a guy that I would have thought would have won more on the on PGA Tour Champions.
Yeah.
And he hasn't.
Yeah.
And that's why I went ahead and ignored him in that lefty market this week. All I've done are props and outrights right now.
No first-round leaders?
No, not yet. The placement markets and the matchups, by the way, depending on when you listen to this, I'll have out Wednesday morning.
Okay. Yeah, and that's I'll bring it up every week. I bet first-round leaders almost weekly. Feel free, if you want to tweet at me and get those, I have no problem sending them to you. I usually wait, though, until later on Wednesday when I really have that weather kind of figured out. So at Kelly Bidlin, hit me up. I'll get those to you.
Okay, last questions. We'll do it rapid-fire on these. I'm just going to cherry-pick golfers, and you're going to give me your quick thoughts on them. One of the LIV golfers who has won this tournament, which we may have given, I'm not even sure if it was here that we gave him a mention, or maybe it was on a numbers game, Patrick Reed. Nothing? You don't like any Patrick Reed here?
In a placement market, perhaps, because he has at least shown, unlike some of the LIV golfers, some form. Remember, he was second at the Dubai Desert Classic, and Rory made that putt, 15 feet birdie, because we were all those of us that were insomniacs and up in the middle of the night watching this thing on Golf Channel, we were hoping we were going to get that Rory and Patrick Reed playoff just for the tension. Because, of course, Rory was served a lawsuit by Patrick Reed.
Didn't really appreciate that, did
so it? It's like, you know, I'd love to see that tension, but Rory won. So Patrick Reed in a placement market, I think, absolutely, like top 20, top 30, but nothing for an outright.
I mean, he's a guy who's won here before. So
2018.
I'm not going to be shocked if he does.
And he plays well when everybody is against him.
Yes.
Well,
he tends to do that.
I don't know if you caught the note this morning. I guess he played a practice round by himself this morning. I think Patrick Reed's approaching this it's not just live against the world, it's me against the world.
He is very litigious, so that's probably why a lot of people don't like him.
That tends to do it.
I'm just clumping him in with all the rest of the live guys. I haven't done anything with him, but I would not be shocked to see him in the mix.
Real quick, just a few more. Bryson DeChambeau, who famously a couple years ago said, I'm playing this like a par 67. Obviously he's not in form. Nothing with Bryson.
No, not at all. Even though he did finish in the top half of the field last week in Orlando. But the last thing he's really been in the mix to win was the long drive championship.
Yeah. Wow.
And he seems to be more interested in that than, you know, being a great golfer.
Is he still regularly doing that? I remember when he started. I didn't know if he was still doing it.
He was I think it was last fall. He was second in the world long drive championship.
Okay. Yeah, he's a guy, Gil, I didn't even consider, and I think the sports books are pricing him absolutely correctly. Right. Like there's
125 to one.
Yeah, even spots where I was trying to look to play against him in matchups, but it's like he's playing another fellow bum.
I bring him up only because of the long distance and the weather just because he needs to be mentioned. A couple more. John Rahm, we have not mentioned once.
I know. He kind of seems to be, of the three favorites, the one that's coldest on the board. Like, you could totally argue for Scottie Scheffler. You could really, really make the argument for Rory. And I think you still can for Rahm. But the thing about Rahm, he has good finishes here, but he's never really been quite there in the mix. It's always been kind of like a battle of attrition where he's out a few groups ahead or he contends early, and then all of a sudden, you know, he shoots like a 67 on Sunday and it looks like he's right there where he was right in the mix to win. And he has dipped a little bit from his form, because we talked about this in January, February. It's like, this guy's going to win like 10 events.
Yeah.
But He has just dipped a little bit, and I just think that's what it is right now. So I'm not going to discount his chances at all. He's got a huge chance.
Highest finish here, fourth, the year that Patrick Reed won in 2018.
Yeah, I still think he is. I still think he's the best golfer in the world with the best, most well-rounded game going right now. I'm a little hesitant, and look, those three guys belong at the top where they're at. He still is a part of those big three. But when you're really picking, you know, we talked about already betting on one of them and then including other outrights. It's not like you can put two of those guys, right? So he is, if I had to rate those three this week, he is probably third.
Yeah.
But I think there's, like Wes, maybe you'll disagree with me, but I think he's another guy that's, I don't think he's flying under the radar, because I don't think John Rahm ever flies under the radar, like I said about Tony Finau. I think he's being a little bit disrespected in the marketplace because, okay, what's he really done? He finished 39th at the API, and then he had the WD from the Players, mm-hmm. right?
That's one reason, I think, why.
But it was a stomach bug or something, mm-hmm. right? Well, so it's not like it's an injury. It's, okay, he had to hit the can too many times, and he didn't want to play golf anymore.
The can,
yeah.
Three wins and nine starts, by the way, this year, and it does kind of feel like we're... Yeah. You know, kind of like pushing him to the side a little bit.
So he withdraws from the Players, and then, okay, he doesn't make it out of his group in match play, but match play is it's funky, and it's mm-hmm. it's not an easy environment. So mm-hmm. I thought long and hard about that last night, Gil, where I just think the market isn't respecting him as much as they should right now, but I'm going to be looking at Scheffler when we're talking about those short shots.
All right, and then lastly, last person, because I'm contractually obligated, and he appears on the screen in front of us. You brought him up early. Eldrick, Tiger, Woods, anything ever. It is the Masters after all.
Right. And look, you know, I was asked about this. I was doing an interview with a Nashville radio station yesterday. And they asked about Tiger. I said, I'm not going to bet it. But if you're asking me if he's going to make the cut, yeah, he's going to make the cut. He's made 23 or 24. However, he's 47 years old. And that just, I don't know why. That should have been obvious to me because we've been following him for over two decades, but it just kind of hits you. He's 47.
47.
Like that. That's amazing to me. And, you know, just looking, I was looking to say, okay, who are his matchups? He's matched up, I think, in a lot of the markets with Sergio Garcia, and it's basically like a coin flip on the price. I think actually they had him against Bryson DeChambeau down at Circa as well. So I'm probably not going to have hardly any Tiger this week. I may have him in a matchup, maybe like a top 40. I'm not going to bet him to make the cut because he's almost $2.
Yeah, yep.
And that's a lot. And this weather can get funky, and he could start hurting. And he's played one event this year. Granted, he looked very good at Riviera, but I'm probably going to avoid him altogether.
Yeah.
I will say...
I felt the need to ask anyway.
Yeah, no, you have to. Yeah. Of course you have to. Yeah. And this is... Look, I like these kind of tournaments where I'm probably not going to have much action on him. So if he's in the mix at the end and I don't have anybody there, I'll be rooting hard for Tiger. Makes the sport better. There's no doubt about that. I agree with what Wes just said. I mean, we would have never thought he was going to do what he did in 2019, and he went out and won the whole damn thing.
His fifth green jacket, his 15th major.
Which is amazing. And he's dealing with all this injury stuff. We were all impressed with what he did at Riviera. I can't bet the make-miss price. I think that's priced pretty accurately here. If anything, I would lean to him making the cut.
Remember, that was a big deal last year?
It was, yes. I would lean towards him making the cut, but I'm not laying. I think it's minus 165. I'm looking at DraftKings. Yeah, 165 for him to make the cut.
That's even too high for me. I would need 150 or lower.
Yeah, I'm not laying that. What I will do, though, if he makes the cut, it's going to probably be target against him in round three, round four in mm-hmm. matchups, because that's when I'm going to be concerned about all the injuries and surgeries he's had. Is that body going to hold up for four straight days? Of all the time on the range, all the time on the course, and as Wes pointed out, this is another course where it's a little deceiving, the elevation changes, and this is a lot of walking for him. Over a long, tough course, I think round three, round four is going to be the time to bet against him in matchups.
Yeah, if he's lurking after a couple rounds, though, I would love to like put a microphone and all. Is he really? You're not going to bet against him?
Yeah.
Well, Tiger Woods, you have to ask about him. Wes did this whole podcast while wearing a green jacket, it should be pointed out. You like to say jokingly that it was what year that you won the Masters?
1987.
Because that's the year after Jack. Yes. No one remembers. Who did win 87?
Yeah, who the hell won?
Larry Mize, right?
I think it was actually Larry Mize, who, by the way, he is going to be playing his last Masters this year. Larry Mize, I believe he and Sandy Lyle are retiring. Yeah, it was Larry Mize who broke Greg Norman's heart, which never breaks my heart.
Which never
when
breaks
Greg Norman anything. Gets his heart.
Yeah,
broken.
Man, he won in a playoff against Seve and Norman. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was one of the iconic Masters finishes ever, man.
Yes.
From the bunker, right?
Yes.
Yeah, from the bunker, Larry Mize. All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Let's get you ready for your show, which is coming up in less than an hour. Long Shots, which Kelly and Wes, Kelly Bidlin, Wes Reynolds, they are doing live with Matt Brown, live on VSiN at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern here on a Tuesday. But that will be put on their podcast feed at Long Shots, available where all podcasts are distributed. Thank you, boys.
Thank you, Gil.
Appreciate it. Enjoy. Good luck with all your Masters bets. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.